Have you been carded? Justice Michael Tulloch is reviewing recent charges to the laws on police street checks, also known as carding, and would like to hear from you. A public consultation will be held in Hamilton on March 20th at the Hamilton Public Library at 6 p.m. He will be making recommendations in a final report to the government. You can share your views on carding by attending. For more details, visit our website at streetchecksreview.ca.
Welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that always champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting at 93.3 CFMU, McMaster's award-winning radio station, and podcasting at comicbookdaily.com. I am Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I'm Chris Owen, Professor at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, Chris and I meet every week to dispense our comic book wisdom.
Wisdom, is that what we're calling it these days?
Oh, it's always been wisdom.
Oh, right. Okay.
Chris and I are learned men. We know stuff about comics, and we know
stuff about stuff.
Yeah, we do. And we pass it along for free, without a fee, to you every week.
For free, without a fee. I like that.
Yeah?
That should be like our motto, right?
For free.
For free, without a fee.
Yeah, I like that. That's us.
That's us.
All right. So every week we start with Chris highlighting some of the books that are hitting your local comic book shops. So, Chris, what do you have for us this week?
Whoa. I think we need a sponsor, don't we?
We need a sponsor, yeah. Sorry, I got the sponsor card.
Let's not get carried away here.
I know. New this week, brought to you by Remy Martin Club Soda.
Ah, the Remy.
It's bubbly with a bite.
I like bubbly with a bite.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that's. I think Arrow offered that bubbly chocolate bar, and they had that weird. What was it? Not cyanide, but
rum.
Yeah. Bubbly with a bite.
All
right, listen. Let's go dive right into new this week. Those, of course, as Walt said, comics that are hitting your newsstand today. We're gonna start off with Captain America number 699. Heading on close to the 700 mark.
Wow.
And this is out of time. Now, here's the thing. Here's what I like about this one. Not only is this Captain America, but on the cover, you have one of the greatest battles in comic bookdom of all time. Two of the opposing foes that many a nerd has talked about who would win. And that is, of course, the Hulk versus the Thing.
So Hulk versus
the Thing on the cover. Who would win? Who do you think would win?
I gotta go with the Hulk.
Yeah, most people do, yeah.
You know why? Because he's controlled by Ditka.
Ah, nice.
The Hulk versus the Thing on Cap 699, that's available at your local comic book shop. Remember, Chris, in the old days, and especially in the Silver Age, late Silver, early Bronze.
Yep.
The Hulk versus the Thing.
It was huge.
That was like a huge battle.
Yeah.
The very first... I think the very first cover depicting a great battle between them was Fantastic Four, number 25.
Right. And is that the one where Hulk started waiting around the corner?
No, that's number 12. That's the first crossover.
Right.
Number 25 was that first, like, the battle cover.
Oh, right.
And then famously FF number 112 with that black cover, the 20 cent.
Yes.
Yeah, that was always worth so much money because, A, in nice shape.
Yes.
Because, A... It,
hard to get in nice shape.
Yeah, because it was a black cover, and it's really hard to get in nice shape. And B, because it was a fantastic battle cover.
Right.
All
right,
so check out Cap 699 at your local comic book shop.
All right, also by Marvel, we've got... So, of course, we're going to talk about this later on in the show, but the Infinity War movie coming out from Marvel on April 27th. So, of course, Marvel is hyping up the whole Infinity concept now. And we've got a new book coming out, Infinity Countdown. So, Infinity Countdown. The final countdown. So, of course, they're going to hype up everything Infinity-ish and have all kinds of creators and all kinds of characters that are. It's kind of going to kind of lead up to Infinity, but probably not really.
Mm-hmm. You can't get to Infinity, Chris. That's
no,
the problem.
That's the problem.
Up to Infinity all you want.
You'll never get there.
You'll never get there.
Yeah. Thanks. That's wise wisdom. But anyways, you know what? Great cover by Eddie Granoff on the variant edition with Ms. Marvel.
Sweet.
Yeah. That Captain Marvel.
You know, that's a good looking book.
It's a good looking book.
That is a good looking book. It's the variant edition, the one I'm holding in my hand, if I'm just holding it up to the mic.
Yes.
Everybody can hear
see
it.
That. Yep.
Infinity Countdown number one at your local comic book shop today.
All right. Also up, we've got, and this is a huge, this is sort of an, I want to say underground hit, but it's one of those sleeper hits where sold out immediately when it came out. I shouldn't say immediately, but based on, sold out very quickly based on word of mouth, Batman White Knight. Now, Batman White Knight number 6 is out on the stands today. Now, for those of you that don't know anything about it, Batman White Knight is a comic that basically started out as having, what if the Joker was actually a good guy and Batman was the bad guy?
Right.
Right, and this is by Sean Murphy and Matt Hollingsworth. Number 6 of 8 is out today.
Is are you reading it still?
I am behind on my comics. Very on these
but
ones.
You started.
I did start reading. It was
so
great.
It's good.
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
so
great.
Forward to it. All right, hey, that's Batman White Knight, Sean Murphy. Number 6 of 8, and it's at your local comic book shop today. And this, Chris, as well, is a good-looking book.
It's got that nice,
I love those glossy covers.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. A little bit of harder
yeah,
stock,
like
glossy
that.
Cover. You know what's a good-looking book?
Uh-oh.
Is Superman number 42. And this, of course, is a takeoff on that American Gothic painting. You know, with the one with the pitchfork and the old man and the wife. This is a sort of a takeoff, and we've got Bizarroverse Part 1, and basically we've got Bizarro and Bizarro Boy and Bizarro Dog and Bizarro Mouse. It looks like. It's very cool, very interesting looking book with all the Bizarro characters on the front cover of the book.
Wait a minute now, he's saying farewell to Bizarro World, but it's all opposite.
Right, so he's actually saying welcome to Bizarro World. That's right.
So, did you ever get into the Bizarro?
I like Bizarro, yeah. I like Bizarro, yeah.
Hey, I know this is a really tough one.
I used to have a Bizarro t-shirt.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow. Was it backwards?
It was. It was a backwards S.
Mm. It didn't say Bizarro. It just had the S. Oh, okay,
yeah.
I get it. What was the first appearance of Bizarro, Chris?
Oh, you gotta go ahead and do that.
That is a tough one. That is a really tough one. Let's give the listenership 3 seconds to guess.
Is that because it's...
The first appearance of Bizarro.
Do you know the first appearance?
Of course I know the first appearance. I know everything.
Okay, 3 seconds. So 3 seconds are up. I'm gonna say it's in Action Comics. Superman. Oh, boy. Really? Legion of Superheroes. Really? And then I have no idea.
Superboy. Superboy number 68.
Interesting.
First appearance of Bizarro.
And is that worth a lot of money these days?
Tons.
Yeah.
It's incredibly hot and incredibly hard to get.
Really?
And you're paying, you know, for a ragged-ass 2.0 or out of 10, you're paying $600.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy. Hey, so give me that book for one more second. I want to show you something that I happened to flip through.
Okay, I forgot to mention that Superboy number 42 is available at your local...
Superman
number 42.
Yeah. So as I was flipping through this book, I don't even know what to say. For comic book fans, you're either on one side of the fence or the other, but there's a giant ad here saying Bendis is coming to Superman. So, and not everybody is a big fan of Brian Michael Bendis, so I'm not really too sure where DC is going with this, because what if you're not a fan of him, and then all of a sudden you're going to say, hey, you know, like, who cares, right? Well, I guess I'm not going to buy DCs anymore. See, I don't know. I'm not in the Bendis fan club. I think for a lot of Marvel titles, he actually ruined a lot of them. But I could be in the minority there. But looking at that now, that makes me not want to buy Superman.
Now, Chris, don't be like that.
Yeah, it's true.
Let's give BMB a chance.
Well, why? I don't know. I'm not kind of ruled off the tongue.
Sorry,
usually, B&B. Yeah,
B&B.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you except that he is coming.
He is coming.
And we're going to see where all that settles. Hey, it's at your local comic book shop, by the way, that Superman number 42.
All right, listen. Next up, we've got Walking Dead is out right now. And Walking Dead number 177. This is part of the New World Order storyline, part number 3 of 6. And what really appealed to me, though, was the Bill Sienkiewicz cover.
Oh.
So Bill Sienkiewicz is doing, he's a longtime artist in the comic book world,
uh-huh.
And he's doing covers, alternate covers and regular covers for Walking Dead right now, and he's sort of doing one of each of the major characters, and now this month it happens to be the governor. Because I immediately said, well, I thought the governor was dead, and he's actually just doing different little vignettes or portraits of them.
Right. That's a good-looking book, too, Chris. You've picked nothing but...
Good-looking books this week,
yeah, and that's important. The governor, who would have thought that Walking Dead would have got to 177?
Not me. Not me, that's for sure.
You know, so it's a pleasant surprise. So, again, Walking Dead 177 at your local comic book shop.
All right, and finally up, we have Jughead The Hunger.
The
Jughead, The Hunger. Now
that's like a vampire tale.
It's like a werewolf tale. So it's basically like, what if Jughead was a werewolf?
Right. Remember that Catherine Deneuve, David Bowie movie, The Hunger?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact,
I think that
was
about vampires.
I think was it vampires?
I think it was vampires.
I think you're right. But yeah, so we've got Jughead, The Hunger, and an awesome cover, by the way, in Jughead, The Hunger by. What do we got here? Hold on, wait for it. Adam Gorham, Michael Walsh, or T-Rex? I think this one's by Michael Walsh. Yeah, it's definitely by Michael Walsh.
It's a Hamilton homeboy,
yeah,
Michael Walsh.
Good old
Walsh.
Hamilton boy, yeah.
So you're in a good chance to say hi to Michael.
Yeah,
anyway.
Hi, Michael.
Hey, Jughead the Hunger number 4 is at your local comic book shop today. And Chris, I think you tapped out there. That is just a smattering of the plethora of books that are hitting the New This Week stand. So please head on into your local comic book shop and check out the New This Week.
All right, let's have a quick musical interlude here. We're going to come back and talk about industry news. But first up, we've got a little bit of the... do you ever wonder what it'd be like to have a dance party on Saturn?
All the time.
Well, this here it is. Saturday Night on Saturn by Les Baxter.
Chris, that is sweet, but that reminds me so much of a song I knew once. It was the Saturday night at the Monte Carlo room of the Riviera Motel.
Oh, nice.
It sounded just like it.
Really? Maybe it was.
He probably ripped it off.
Probably.
Hey, that brings us to industry news. And industry news is brought to you by, Remy Martin Club Soda. Feel the soda burn.
Feel that soda burn. I like that. I think that was their catchphrase for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, feel the soda burn.
Yeah, I like it.
Oh, my goodness.
All right.
Yeah.
So what...
But then we got those little tablets. Solve that problem.
There's always a tablet for any kind of burn you have, right?
It is.
Yeah, that's true. What are we going to talk about here? Are we going to talk about Emerald City?
Yeah, let's talk about Emerald City. So I had a couple guys I knew that went to Emerald City. And they haven't given me reports yet, but they're not, who knows.
Okay, so for our listening audience,
yeah.
Well, first of all, we need to have a Oh, no, I already did the sponsor, didn't
I?
Sorry, the soda that burns. So for our listening audience, in case you're not too sure what we're talking about, the Seattle hosts a large comic book convention called the Emerald City Comic Con, and it's actually it's a big one. It's a four-day event, and it was bought out by Reed Pop, who owns the New York Comic Con and now the London Comic Con. Mm-hmm. So they put lots of money behind these things.
And they have C2E2 in Chicago.
Yep. So
Big players.
Big players in this show. So now they had their 16th edition of that convention, and they had a 95,000 ticket sales.
Yeah, over 4 days. And it's one of those things at Emerald City, Chris, where, you know, the convention hall can hold absolute tops, 25,000 a day.
Yeah.
So they'll never crack 100.
They're maxing out, yeah.
You know, I mean, so what they're trying to do now as they're doing some stuff off-site.
Right.
They're doing signings at a hotel next door. They're doing something at a hall next door.
Yeah.
There's something down at the Legion.
One thing you can do if you're maxed out at your venue, right?
Yeah.
You have to somehow transfer it out to other places around the city.
Well, San Diego's been doing that for years,
So
they've been having to go to other places. And 2 years ago when I was at the New York show, they started doing that too.
So, I'm not a big fan of that. You know, I remember going to TCAF, the Toronto Comic Arts Festival, years ago, and I had to get a signature by a guy who did Foxtrot, Bill Amend. I wanted to get his signature, and I had to go to a hotel, four blocks down the street. And you know what? I like being immersed in the whole convention,
staying there. Right.
I get it if there's a separate building.
What's that darn show on TV where the couples they run around the world trying to get stuff?
The Great Race or something?
Amazing Race.
Yeah.
I gotta run to this hotel to get this signed. I gotta get this sketched over at the library.
Yeah.
And then I gotta go get it signed over at the hotel. And then I gotta go to this Legion Hall to have a beer with Norm. And then I have to, I don't know.
That's okay. But the problem with that is, it really limits the amount of time you can spend doing other things. So I get it and people will say, well, you have to prioritize what's important to you. Everything's important. I want to see everything. I want to be a part of everything.
Yeah,
so you know what? Yeah. I don't want to, but what I don't want to do is spend time walking to somewhere.
But Chris.
What?
We're a victim of our own success. These convention centers were big enough for everything.
Right.
Until Comic-Cons came along.
It's a great point.
You know,
that's a great point.
And now Comic-Cons, the Javits Center in Manhattan can't fit a Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Right, that's how big they are.
It'd be interesting to find out if there are any other shows on the planet that are, how much bigger they are than Comic-Con.
Well, I'm sure there are, like that one, what's the tech show in Vegas? That gets like 300,000 over the week, I think.
That's
multiple venues, I'm sure.
It has to be.
Yeah.
But I mean, how many shows are like that?
That's what I mean.
How many shows are like that? I know that's just one.
That's only one, right?
Yeah.
Whereas Comic-Cons can replicate that success literally in, I would say like a dozen cities worldwide now.
Right.
I don't think
the tech show can do that in 10 cities around North America.
Right, you're right.
Right?
You're absolutely right. Yeah, you're right. But, again, we're victims of our own success. I don't know. Like, the thing that worries me, you and I go way back. We remember back when shows were, each had their own character.
Yes.
We would go to this show for this.
Yeah.
We would go to that show. You used to love going to Pittsburgh for the warmth, and you could meet the guests and talk to them because there weren't big lines.
Yeah.
We would go to Detroit to meet the celebs because Michael had a lot of celebs at his show.
Yeah.
We would go to Chicago to buy comics because they had the best backyard, basement, part-time dealers because tables were cheap
100%.
For them. Yeah. And all shows had their little shtick, little niche and stuff.
Yeah.
And now with, Reed Pop, I don't know, I get the sense that they're all just some sort of mega corporate thing.
When Wizard World took over Chicago, because before it used to be just, the Chicago Comic Con.
Yeah.
And then Wizard World took over, and all of a sudden, the prices for each table went up.
Yep.
So, you're getting more of the businesses and not the mom and pops anymore.
Yep. Yeah, it wasn't the place to buy anymore.
Whereas, it had, if you wanted that Action One or that Detective, 27.
Yeah, but in the old days, we were willing to wait to go to New York or San Diego to buy the Action One, right, whoever right, has enough right. flipping money to buy an Action One. But even if it's a Spider-Man one,
yeah,
you know, we
yeah.
would wait for New York or you know, wherever.
Yep.
Whereas,
You know, what's funny is case in point. I remember the first time I bought a Daredevil one.
Uh-huh.
I remember thinking to myself, well, that's what I'm going down for. I'm going down to find my Daredevil one,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, so that's but down in Chicago, I did it.
Yeah,
in
you
Chicago.
Bought it in Chicago.
Bought it in Chicago.
Is that the year we went together? Or did you go in?
This is a couple years before that.
Uh-huh.
I think it was like 1990 or 1991. So,
oh yeah,
you know, and I don't think you and I went until like 99 or 2000. Or
right.
Something like
yeah,
that.
You're right.
You know, so like, it's you know, yeah, you're right. You're right. Every one of those shows had its own little flavor to it, and then but even do you remember like. They had like the hotel cons, like the Dreamland con.
Well,
like
let's talk about that. I mean, in Toronto, the place that we're near, you know, we're in Hamilton, the GTA, the Greater Toronto Hamilton area, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's a huge market, right? We're like, you know, fifth or sixth or biggest area market in North America.
Yeah.
For this kind of stuff. And the success of Fan Expo, which draws 140,000 people in or whatever it is comic collectors don't like it. So
no.
Over the last couple of years, these one-day shows, this one-day show in particular, I think it's the Toronto Comic Show or something. I forget what it's called. It's at a small hotel, and it is packed, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
And you get I'm going to use silly math.
Yeah.
You know, if a dealer can, you know, sell $5,000 worth of his wares over the course of a con, you know, it depends. If you do it in Toronto at this little one-day con, your overhead is $250.
Yeah,
it's like
your cost of
$75 bucks for a table.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you get one table because it's a small con. You drive in your pickup truck.
Yeah.
And you go to this, you know, megalopolis 4-day show or 3-day show in Toronto that's coming up, and I mean your costs
are astronomical.
Are $10,000 if you want to do, you know, they're ridiculous, right?
Yeah. So you have to have lots of high end product that you're going to sell, or you're going to sell a lot of $2 books,
right? And then you got to get these huge cargo vans and like trucks, you have to get a lot of people, a big crew. You have to have an Airbnb condo. You have to, oh
all
my
that
goodness,
stuff. All
you know,
that stuff.
They're so expensive to do as a vendor,
right?
And so, for pure comic, if your niche is pure collectible comics, all you need is that one day show in Toronto.
Yep.
If you're a store that wants to kind of show off their wares and maybe sell some overstock of graphic novels you had or sell some damaged toys that you had, just get rid of them, That Toronto show is a good place
to
do it.
Okay, so here's a perfect place to bring this up.
Yep.
So what if, for example, you're a guy that's collected comics for 20 years. So, I mean, so you got a fair-sized collection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you maybe didn't collect every title, but you collected a few titles a month. Or maybe you've been collecting old books for a long time, you know, so you have a fair-sized collection. But you have a collection that maybe stems from, you know, a few books from the 70s, a few books from the 80s, from the 90s, the 2000s. Like, you know, so 2000s, you know, the books from the 2000s, they're not worth anything, right?
The books from the 90s are worth less.
Right. So where
the worst books are from the 90s.
Where do you go to sell this stuff?
Woo!
Like, do you try to put up a booth at a small show and put a price of
the problem
two
with,
bucks each?
The problem with these small one-day shows is it's trafficked by savvy buyers.
Right.
And these savvy buyers are going in. Most of the money exchanged is for key issues that are hot at the time, issues that the market is looking for. And, you know, I'm talking about things like Spider-Man 129, the first Punisher, or New Mutants 98, the first Deadpool.
So,
yeah,
okay,
I'm making up stuff. So you bringing in a van full of crap that's worth a buck each.
Right.
I don't know how much of that you're going to sell.
Okay, so hold on. So are you saying that those one-day shoes, basically, I'm going to use some really wrong terms here, But is it just a bunch of inbreeders, like a bunch of guys who are just getting together and they all know each other and they're all basically just trading books?
Everybody's flipping and trading.
Hoping that somebody's going to screw up on a price and price it wrong.
Pretty well.
You know. Okay. So
other, you know, most of your activity at these one-day shows, Chris, is pre-show dealer to dealer.
Right. Yeah, so as a guy going in to hoping to get a deal on something, you're not going to find it.
Unless you come to my booth, of course.
Right.
Yeah, but you're right.
So you're saying as a homespun collector who wants to unload his books, you're saying one-day shows are probably not a good idea.
Well, I think the thing you have to do first of all is find a trusted source and then get information. Tell them what you have. You have to make yourself some sort of list.
Right.
Make yourself an Excel spreadsheet or something like that. Try to knock them down. If your collection's too big to do that, well, then you should kind of have a macro kind of description spreadsheet. Like, I have a lot of DCs. My Amazing Spider-Mans, I have about 400 issues, you know, going back to number 111, you know, that kind of stuff, right? And then you do stuff like that, and then you have to find a trusted source. If you don't trust a source, you go to two or three sources, and you just kind of... You spitball, you give them an email or you give them a phone call, and if you hear something like this, if you hear something like, yeah, the stuff that you have, I'm afraid it's just common 90s stuff or 80s stuff, you know, that's really hard to sell. I mean, you can put it on Kijiji or eBay in bulk, because the problem with eBay, Chris, is... It's a full-time job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, hey, I got $6 for this piece of crap comic. Well, you know.
Now, how long does it take you to do that?
Yeah, exactly. But you just can't put one comic up. You have to put, you know, 1,000 listings up and to actually take 1,000 picks, to do 1,000 posts, to do 5,000 correspondences, do packaging, to do loss retrieval when the guy doesn't like it or the girl doesn't like it.
Yeah.
It's incredibly time intensive, right?
So
it's a full-time job. So if the person tells you, yeah, you got crap.
Yeah.
Well, you got crap. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously do your research, but you can't turn 7,000 crap books into, you know, $20,000. You're going
to
donate them to a library if you don't want to sell them to the local comic book shop for $700.
Right.
You know, because they're going to probably end up giving half of them away to their you know,
so,
whatever they got
going. What are the avenues that somebody could sell their books at? So you got a show. You can try to do a show.
Yeah, you can set up at a show. If you got a good mix, if you got some good stuff, you can set up at the show. The problem with any kind of dealer like that has to sell out their stuff, it's a law of diminishing returns. If you're not replenishing, obviously your second show is going to be less than your third show. But hey, the exciting news is, Chris, you and I have both witnessed this. The exciting thing is is when you go to a Comic-Con and you're a dealer, right?
Yeah.
So here we are. Let's say the show starts on Friday and we're all setting up Thursday. And, you know, there's my pal Oscar and there's my pal Harley. Yeah, and he's like, hey, Steve, how you doing? Hey, bad. Hey, another con.
You
know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then out of the corner of our eye, we see fresh meat.
That's right.
We see some old guy setting up.
Yeah.
And it's like, we're all looking at each other. Who's going to get there first? Right? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, what does this guy have? Right?
Right.
So we all run over. Right. And that poor guy, and it's not even a poor guy.
Yeah.
That poor guy might, you know, do half, the three quarters of his business before he opens up.
Sure. Yeah.
That's always fun if you're setting up at a show and it's your first time. All the traditional dealers are going to kind of,
Can
I look at your stuff? Can I look at your stuff? Well, you let me set up first. You know, that kind of stuff. So, there's shows. Obviously, there's eBays. You can sell in bulk on eBay.
Yeah, I was going to say, so on eBay, if you were to sell in bulk, do you sell 5 books at a time?
No,
you sell 50?
Still too much. You sell a box at a time.
A box at a time.
Yeah, you sell
But then the shipping costs are astronomical.
Yeah, if a guy wants to buy it, he wants to buy it. What the heck? I mean, hey, I didn't say it was easy to sell on eBay.
All right. Yeah.
But a Kijiji, which is like a local ad thing. And some people, you have to have people over to your house, which is uncomfortable for a lot of people.
It is, yeah.
And then there's always your local comic book shop. And depending on the mix of what you have, you can have they'll all come to you.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Just like, or you can go, if you have, let's say, three local comic book shops that know how to sell back issues in your, say, 40-minute radius.
Right.
You can drive them out.
Right,
And, you know, get offers and stuff like that. So, but the state of the market is now most resellers.
Yep.
They're not going to want to give you much for stuff that's attrition sales, the stuff that has to sit in bargain bins.
Right.
They're going to give you pennies to the dollar on that stuff
because
just the cost of trying to sell that stuff is prohibitive to buying it, right?
Well, you
almost
got to
get a throw in, you know? And so, but if you had a Hulk 181 in there and stuff, they'll give you a good money for that. Actually, the market's really good for a seller of that kind of stuff.
Well, for that stuff, but I'm talking about the average Joe who's been collecting for 20 years.
Yeah. So he's got his cap run, and dealer will give him something for his 100, something for his 117, but he's getting hardly anything for everything else.
Right. Is that the state of it? Is that what's
basically
going to happen?
Pretty well.
So even the old books, even if they're from the 70s, they're still...
You know what? If you have a 15-cent Captain America, and it's not number 117, and it's not in this ultra uber high grade 9.4, 9.6 out of 10, it's basically a bargain book.
Really?
Yeah, like $5 tops, maybe 10 if it's whatever. But
Like two even? Like,
well, if it's red, if it's roughly, if it's like 123, cap 123, and it's in rough shape, it's $2 book.
Yeah.
Right. If it's like a VF solid copy, just a nice copy, it's like $10 maybe.
Okay.
Right? Whereas if it's, you know, 9.8-ish.
But then books from like the 2000s and the 1990s, for the most part...
Unless they're special issues, they're nothing. Yeah. But there's the good news with comic collecting, Chris, is there's a lot of special issues.
Okay, so speaking of special issues, and this is not on what we were going to talk about, so I'm going to throw this at you.
Throw it
out. So recently, Amazing Spider-Man had an issue that came out that had, I think it's 375 or 377, I don't remember the actual title. Not three. Is it three? No, six. Anyways.
775. Maybe. 2 years ago?
Recently. No, last little while, they had with the Red Goblin. So the Red Goblin is a character that's sort of now become an amalgamation of both the Green Goblin and Carnage. And a lot of stores are selling out of these things because it's the introduction of a new villain. But, you know, it's today. It's these dives. It's the last month or so that this character's come out. And, you know, people are hoarding them. People are buying 10, 20 copies of them.
Well, you know what? As old fuddy-duddies, Chris, what you got to realize is, even to you and me, what the heck is a Venom?
Right. You're right.
What the heck is a Venom?
Yeah.
Right? But let's say, when did Venom come out? 80-something.
88
let's just say 88 for all intents and purposes. You know, we were well past our kid phase and stuff like that, so to us it was these are kids, right? So but now the Venom fans that were 12 years old back then are 40,
right?
So now they're fuddy-duddies even, right? So really, since Venom, there's only been one add-on that spoke to a newer generation, and that was Carnage.
Right.
But even the Carnage guys now are in their
30s. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
So what new Spidey villain has ignited the kids?
Right.
That they can claim as their own.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's this one.
Maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
And so who are you and I to sit here and say, these kids don't know.
Right,
they don't know. Chris, they don't know villains.
villains. They don't know villains.
They don't know.
Where's Kraven?
Yeah. Well, our villains used to fight crime barefooted.
Doc Ock. Now, there's a villain that can turn your head.
That's right. He had the hots for Aunt May. God bless him.
All right. You know what? That's very, very knowledgeable. So, basically, just to recap, we're going to say, if you have a collection...
bring it to me.
Bring it to Walt.
Uh-huh.
You try to sell on eBay. I guess selling on eBay is going to make your most money, but... most time-consuming.
Yeah. Make a list, Chris. Make yourself a complete list as possible, and ask around.
Yeah.
Those would be the two best things.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah. All right. Listen, let's have a quick musical interlude here. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit more about... I think we're going to talk about Black Panther, I think, and how Black Panther is doing so well. But up until then, we're going to have a little bit of Doctor Who.
some spacey stuff, Chris. I love that.
You like that?
Classic.
Yeah.
Hey, listen. The next part of industry news. Oh my goodness, I have a sponsor here. I just have to find.
All right.
Is brought to you by, of course, Remy Martin Club Soda, who's booked the whole show. hey, it's not your dad's club soda.
It really isn't. Yeah.
So, hey, let's talk about this juggernaut
of Black Panther.
That is Black Panther.
Right.
It is. Cracked the $500 million mark domestically in 3 weeks, Chris. In 3 weeks.
Well, it's funny you reminded me of that. I thought when I was talking about Black Panther, I was saying, you know, I don't think it's going to get much higher because it's already gotten so high. But then you said it's only been up for 3 weeks.
Huh?
3 weeks and it's already cracked $500 million.
Well, you and I were looking at what's the record there? $623 million domestic for a superhero movie with Avengers.
Yeah.
I'm saying this is going to beat it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
For pure dollars.
Now, we're talking about just superhero movies in general.
Yeah,
we're not talking about all-time.
Like Titanic or Avatar
or
whatever.
For superhero movies, it's number three right now, trailing only to The Dark Knight, which had $534 million, and Avengers, which was $623, as we just said. So, you can say, it's not going to make it. But you know what? It just had $65 million just this past weekend. There are a lot of movies that don't even get that in their first week.
There's a lot of movies that don't get that ever.
Ever. Yeah, you're right.
Five-week run.
Yep.
And they're, $50 million if they're lucky. What I wanted to say about this, I wanted to kind of talk about what I think is a cool topic, and it's the culture, like the comic, like the Black Panther is an African prince, okay, and it's being celebrated as the first movie that a person of color is the main hero, and it's being the draw power to that demographic of consumers has been very strong.
Sure.
So, which opens up the can. I'm sure people in Hollywood and people at Disney and people at Marvel, have their eyes wide open. Much like their eyes were lit open when Guardians of the Galaxy did really well. And they go, hey, wait a minute.
Yep.
The crap we have that can't sell comics, that might actually be a good movie.
Yeah,
so they're actually looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
Comic books per se, comic books, the comic book medium is an American medium.
Right.
It is born in America. It is an American intrinsic thing. It's part of their culture and customs.
Totally.
Right? So, and when you look at why the Black Panther succeeded, I think, is you have a very, very large portion of the American population.
Right.
That's American.
Yeah.
That is African of origin.
Right. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But the key there is that they're American.
Absolutely.
And that they're long-standing, multi-generational Americans. So they, like all Americans, have bought into comic books.
Absolutely.
From great-granddad's time.
Sure. Sure.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So then you got to look at, though, then I thought in my head, okay, what are the other, because let's say I'm talking about, I'm talking from a standpoint of, say, my dad or me when I was a kid. We came as immigrants.
Yep,
I was a little kid, but my dad,
no,
talk about the comic book. What the heck is that,
book?
Right?
Yeah,
it's not, that wasn't part of the Eastern European culture or anything like that. So forget that.
Yeah.
Right? But
you had to have been born in North America.
Or your dad or granddad or somebody had to have been born. Like, you know what I'm saying? So what were, like, then I thought, okay, what are the long, long standing cultures in within America that aren't, white European?
Okay,
And first thing that comes to mind is the very large Hispanic, Latino thing.
Yep.
So right away I'm starting to think, wow, like a Miles Morales Spidey based on, how well Black Panther's doing, would a Miles Morales Spidey ever hit based on the fact that the Latin American portion of the American population have also bought into comics.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
They
understand the superhero concept. Because you know how superheroes never worked in Europe?
Right, no, they didn't,
Tintin and Asterix and Obelix were the things that were big.
Yeah, they want crime or they want...
Yeah, or humor.
Like diabolic or humor.
Or sarcasm or...
Satire,
Satire, where...
where superheroes is all about the North America.
Right. And then I thought, well, you know what also is a large demographic is the Asian, like the large old Asian population of the United States and Canada. You know, like Chinatowns were existent in, you know, in the 1908s, 1920s, and 1930s. Well, so
they're unsung immigrants to North America, right?
Right.
Who often get overlooked when talking about the origins of North America.
But what's their representation within comics?
Right.
And I'm thinking, very stereotypical, if it's a Chinese or Asian type of hero, you expect them to know martial arts.
You know what I'm saying?
You expect them almost like a Bruce Lee kind of thing,
right?
And I'm wondering, okay, like, you know what I mean? Like, what... Can this open up other American, you know, like Native Americans?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Is there a great Native American superhero? Like a really, really popular A-list, even B-list one?
Not A-list or B-list, I would say. Maybe like D-list.
How about Asian?
Sunfire?
Yeah, you know what I mean, though. We're scratching for one,
right?
Yeah.
Like, there's not a whole lot. There's not a whole lot.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Katana from DC. Native American. I can't think of one.
Latino. Because the Latin population of the United States was huge in the 60s and the 70s. That was always the third largest kind of cultural group within the United States, right?
I can't
even think of one either.
I don't even know what I'm trying to get at.
Is there untapped opportunities for Americana through the larger ethnic groups?
I think there's lots of untapped stuff, but I think there's, you know, Black Panther, although he was the first, widely known African-American hero, he wasn't the first, and certainly he was popular, but he had, you know, stops and starts too, right?
I don't mean within comics. Like, I think I'm missing. You're not trying to misunderstand me. You're misunderstanding me here, in the sense that North American public, they don't necessarily like comic books, but they accept the premise of the superhero.
Absolutely.
So, for example, when you go to, when 80 million people go to see Avengers,
right?
You know, 1% of that, not even 1% of that, Chris, 0.1% of that buy the comic book.
Right.
You know, 80,000 would be probably a print run of Avengers title.
Yeah, you're right.
So 99.9% of the viewing audience don't give two craps about, but because they're American, the concept of the superhero is not alien to them. They've accepted it because they've had the lunch pails, wore the pajamas, the toques,
read
with the books. So it's part of the culture.
Right.
So, let's go see this cool movie.
But at the same time, I totally get what you're saying, but I think there's still a lot. I mean, the characters like Black Panther's been around for, you know, 50 years.
Yeah, but still, it's a sliver. I mean, how many people are going to see this movie, and how many people ever read a Black Panther comic?
Okay, but...
Again, 0.1%, maybe.
But the studio is not going to make a movie about a character that nobody's heard of. The studio's not going to come...
But not many people have heard of Black Panther.
But it's been around long enough that there's been enough people that know about it. Like,
I think it's more important, honestly. This is my... I could be wrong. I think it's more important that the North American audience is accepting that this is a superhero, and they're willing to forgive and you know, leave reality at the door. What do you call it? Leave.
I know your suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, at the door. So we all buy into superhero movies.
Sure.
I think 99% of the people going in have never. I'd say 90% of the movie going in didn't hear of Black Panther until 2 years ago.
Until
they announced the movie.
I will totally agree with you. But are there characters out there?
That's what I'm asking.
I can't think of any.
Neither can I.
So we're at an impasse.
Oh.
So I don't know.
Should we move on?
Probably.
All right.
I don't know what else you want me to say. Like, I mean, I don't think that... I don't know if the characters are out there, and if not, there should be. But I don't think a Miles Morales is going to do as well as a Peter Parker.
Yeah, but I think a Miles Morales will do well.
Will it?
Yeah, of
people,
course.
Or won't people just go, I've seen it before?
Not really. I think
why is Miles Morales really adding that much to a different movie?
I guess you're right. In a sense there, Miles Morales is different because he is a adaptation of an existing hero.
Right.
I'll give you that. As opposed to, let's say, an original character that happens to be of that demographic,
right,
or an Asian or
right,
a Native American,
yep,
or a Hispanic or
yeah, so I mean, if all of a
Russian
sudden put, okay,
or,
yeah, if all of a sudden you put a white guy in a Black Panther outfit,
uh-huh,
and would you say, oh, people are going to go see that because it's Black Panther? Because
I know what you're saying. Yeah, it's the same thing. It's like you're taking an existing character and changing.
Right.
Yeah, that's not what I meant. I meant, I guess, what I meant was, I think the studios are fishing for, right now, they are fishing for characters like the Black Panther that lend to a large American demographic that hasn't been.
And the one that you've missed on so far,
mm-hmm,
that is already coming out, is the large American demographic is the female population.
You're right. You're absolutely
and,
right. Yeah.
And Captain Marvel is coming out,
uh-huh,
and what they should be tapping into is more of those characters, because you're not dealing with a small percentage. You're dealing with, you know, almost, if not more than 50%.
Yeah, but Chris, but hold on. I don't know what the population of African Americans is in 12, 13, whatever. They're not the only ones going to see. Everybody's going to see it. It's a great movie, I agree with you.
Let's say a
Japanese hero, not only Japanese people are going to go see it.
Of course. But I'm feeding into what you're saying, that they need to tap into more of the female characters right now.
You're right.
Because that is 50% of the population.
You're right. And Wonder Woman
right?
proved how well it could be done.
So why not do more of those, right?
I smell a Harry Gamora movie coming.
All right, you know what? Let's have a quick musical interlude here. We're running low on time, believe it or not.
Whoa!
So let's have a quick musical interlude here. What are we gonna do here? Let's do. You know what? Let's keep with the space theme here. We're gonna keep on going, and this one here is the one from Star Trek.
Space Ghost.
And that was the theme from Star Trek by Leonard Nimoy, with a little bit of a jazzy kick to it there.
And a Space Ghost cameo.
That's right. And we would like to remind our listening audience that, of course, you are listening to 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio. And this is fundraising week, so if we would appreciate it if you take your time and maybe drop off a few bucks to CFMU.
You can go online, CFMU.ca,
yep,
or just Google CFMU.
McMaster Radio,
and they have an online thing where you can donate.
You can donate some money, and public access radio is a great thing to have for we are able to have a great wide variety of programming, and you get talk radio, great shows like ours, which is of course making CFMU the hit that it is.
Exactly, and a portion of the I'm not sure, but a portion of the proceeds do go to our Club Soda Fund.
Absolutely,
so,
yes.
So please donate generously.
Generously.
All right, Chris. Hey, I was rummaging through that internet thing. Cool stuff.
Yep.
And before that, Chris, I was getting ready for the show.
Yeah.
The Toronto Comic Con.
Oh,
show,
yeah, yeah.
And I was pricing up some books, and I priced up a really cool Millie the Model.
Millie the Model.
Yeah, it was a little Millie the Model.
Okay,
and I priced it up. And I go, hey, and I remember a week before I priced up another one of those old Marvel things.
Model kind of things.
A quick two-question test for you here.
Mm.
The old Timely Comics from the 40s, they had Millie, who was what?
The model.
They had Nellie, who was what?
Oh, hold on. Nellie was Nellie the... I don't know that
starts
one.
With an N.
I know. I'm trying to think. Nelly the...
Then it has a U. Then it has an R.
Nurse.
Hey, you are nurse. Good at okay, this, yeah. Chris. And then there was Tessie.
I know that one. Tessie was a typist.
She was a typist, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Now, I was also on that internet thing, and I don't know how I got onto looking at some pics and stuff like that. I remember...
Be careful where you're going when you do that.
Yeah. I remember that a couple of years back, DC had those great, great covers of the Bombshell covers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Awesome. It's by the whole series.
Yeah. Now, they had a lot of great characters on those Bombshell covers.
Yep, yep.
Okay, and I know you liked your DC girls.
I do like my DC okay? girls, that's right.
So
yeah.
I want you to give me a calendar's worth of characters that were on the DC. Let me see how good you are at your memory. A right, calendar's worth. Right, you know how much right. a calendar's worth
it's
is?
12, yeah.
It's 12, yeah. So just like a calendar.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So I want... Remember, she would have had to been figured prominently yep. with a beautiful cover.
I got
cover,
it. No
okay?
problem. No problem.
So
I got this in the bag.
Let's go, Chris.
Yeah, Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman was one.
Yep. Hawk Girl.
Hawk Girl was one.
We got Mara, I believe, was one. Wasn't she?
Was Mara one?
I thought, okay, maybe I'm wrong. Okay, hold on.
She might have been one. I don't have her on my list. No, she was one. You are correct, sir.
I thought she was one, yeah. Yep. Supergirl.
Supergirl was one.
Yeah. What else? Zatanna.
Zatanna was one. Very good. You got a thing for Zatanna.
I know I do have a thing for Zatanna, yeah. Hold on. I can't remember. I don't think Power Girl was one of them. I don't think she was.
I don't know if she was either. I don't have her on the list.
I know there was an issue where she was actually holding up Superman, but I think that was one of the actual Bombshell
issues. Yeah, it was. I don't think she was.
Let me see here. We got, Catwoman.
Catwoman was definitely one of them.
Poison Ivy.
Poison Ivy was definitely one of them. You're at seven. Harder than you thought,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me think now. I don't think Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn was one of them.
Okay, yeah.
How about, what's the, you know, in terms of universes, what's the most popular universe within DC? You know, the sphere, the heroic sphere.
The heroic sphere.
Like, to tie to that one big character, who has the most sub-characters?
Superman?
Nah.
Batman?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, well, who are we missing?
Batgirl.
Batgirl,
right.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank
yes.
you.
Oh, right. Black Canary?
Black Canary.
Not on there? Not on the list?
Oh, she's on here.
Okay,
good
thought
for
so,
you.
Yeah.
That's 10.
Yeah, hold on. So, wait. I got two more coming here. Oh boy. Jeebus.
How about stay on the bats?
Batwoman.
Batwoman, 11.
Yes,
one more.
Yeah, so she actually had a bat, I remember that.
Yeah.
One more. Oh, and hold on, wait. What's her name? Cheetah. Cheetah, no?
She might have been. I think she was. Catwoman, definitely.
Catwoman?
You might have said Catwoman.
I think I said Catwoman.
Very good.
Yep.
Okay.
So that's it.
Supergirl, Harley Quinn, Stargirl.
Oh, Stargirl,
one.
I didn't
yeah.
say.
Hawk
okay.
Girl was one.
Hawk Girl is a famous one. For some reason, they show her a lot.
Yeah. Raven was
one. Oh, I didn't get Raven either.
Lois Lane. Did you say Lois Lane?
I did not say Lois Lane.
She was one. Yeah. But you did good. You got you pulled out to 12. Very good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Those are fantastic.
Those are very good covers.
And I think there was... Because some of the girls appeared multiple times.
Yes.
I think there was something like 58.
Yeah. I think
and that
right.
is a really cool... You know how you and I talk about the fun of
comic collecting? Yeah. You know what? I love that stuff.
Okay. So, let's talk about this.
Okay.
The fun of comic collecting.
Yeah.
There's nothing hotter in today's market than... Girls on covers.
It really is. You know what?
Girls on covers.
Girls on covers. Nah, nah, nah.
Girls
so you know, you and I have talked about this a lot lately. So sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I'm just saying. Then you can get into it. What more fun project for a comic book fan and a comic book collector than to put it on to himself or herself to go and knock off all 58.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. I mean? I love
and
that.
And not just
stuff.
Go on eBay and
no,
just buy it off
easy.
Of one guy.
You
going
know
to cons, going to comic shops, and having that little list in your hand. The most you're going to pay is probably, what, 10, 20 bucks for the best one?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think 20 would probably be too high.
Right.
Maybe.
So you're picking most of them up for $2, $5, bucks, you know?
You know what? Buying those books. So, yeah. When you, as a collector, the best and worst day is when you complete your collection.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And then it's time for upgrade.
And then you upgrade, or yeah. You got to find something else.
Then you got to find something else,
right?
Yeah.
You got to hone into something else that interests you.
Because I was looking at these, and there was like images and stuff, and then there was like a couple of montages, and I go, yeah. My goodness, what a fantastic collecting.
That's a great idea.
Collecting stream. That
I
would
might
be,
actually, I might actually do yeah, that. I'm actually
collect the bombshell,
yeah,
right?
Go ahead.
Like literally. You can budget yourself, just for the books, $250,
yeah.
300 tops,
yeah, yeah.
And you've got all 58 bombshells,
yeah.
Unless
yeah.
I'm missing one or two that I don't know about that cost you more, but you know what I mean, then
yeah.
you might add a little bit
well,
more.
Well, there was a run that DC was doing there for a while there, and they seem to have stopped, where every month they would do something really cool.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, really interesting. Like, there was a month where all the covers were by Darwin Cook. And
yeah.
then there was a month where it was like all Harley Quinn.
Right.
And there was a month where it was like all the bombshells, right?
Right.
They seem to have stopped that. And you know what? It's sad because it's almost like they ran out of good ideas.
Yeah.
Because there's
yeah.
a lot of good stuff
well,
that they could still
well,
do.
Well, you know what? Along that same vein for collectors, along the same vein
yep.
is when Marvel did all those hip-hop cover variants.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
I think a couple of those are worth big bucks.
Yeah, though. Some of those are great. Where
yeah.
they replicated the album covers
yeah.
as a hip-hop...
right, whatever. It could have been the first Public Enemy album
right, yeah,
or...
Yeah.
I don't know, what do you call them? Cool Modi album or
yeah, yeah, no,
a Beastie
right.
Boys
yeah,
album
yeah.
or something like that.
And some of those are awesome. I've
yeah.
got a couple of them. They're great.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Marvel did the same thing, but they did them a little bit differently. They had the hip-hop one, which I think they still do once in a while. They had the Scotty Young covers, but
uh-huh.
that was just all covers by the same artist, which... it was okay. You know, having said that, I said the same thing about Darwin Cook, which I loved. But
right.
I don't know. There's something about Darwin Cook that I loved. But anyways, you know, and I think they should rethink about doing something like that. But come up with something really interesting. I don't know, like I don't know, chocolate bars or something
right,
like soda
right.
pop or
yeah.
you know, something
yeah.
where they can incorporate something different to every single cover. You know, a laundry ad.
You know what they should
like
do? They should do a hairdo cover.
Yeah.
So they should do a superhero cover of the 70s sideburns look.
Perfect.
And then they should do an 80s Jerry curl look.
Yep.
And then they should do a 90 or 60s
awesome.
Crew cut look.
Yeah.
You know, like they just
that'd
have
be
a
awesome.
As silly as that,
yeah.
right? It
no,
could be as silly
absolutely.
As that. That's
but,
very.
But
cool.
you know, you get the right artist, and
yeah.
it becomes awesome. And speaking of which, you know, the Action Comics 1000 is coming out soon,
uh-huh.
and.